It's Monday, which means it's time for our weekly Astronomy Ireland Skywatch with David Moore, editor of Astronomy Ireland. David, it's great to have you back.
Yeah, we're well rested after Easter.
Yes. Now, this week's skies are packed with celestial treats from Venus and Saturn. Saturn cozying up at dawn to the moon, dancing with Mars and the International Space Station, making a grand pass over Ireland. Okay, so let's dive in. David, Venus and Saturn are unusually close this morning, just 3.7 degrees apart. How can our listeners spot this pair, and why is Saturn so much harder to see?
Well, the only problem with it would be getting up early, because you can only see Venus in the dawn skies very early on. So you need to get up around the 5:30 mark, 6 o'clock, and you're looking for a very bright star. People may have been used to seeing Venus in the evening sky in the first couple of months of the year. Well, it went in front of the sun, almost in front of the sun, and now it's come out on the other side. So it's in the morning sky now, and will be for the next few months. But it is from Ireland very low. There have been some international reports of it lining up nicely with the moon and the like. Unfortunately, it's very low from Ireland, better seen at more southerly locations in, say, the continental USA. But if you don't mind getting up early in the morning, the sun rises just around 6 a.m., so maybe from 5 a.m. onwards, you'll see Venus in the dawn twilight. So you can see the bright patch on the horizon where the sun is going to rise. Look a bit to the right of that. There'll be a brilliant star there. I know you can see it because I was walking home from a photography night in the twilight, and there was Venus just keeping pace with me, easily spotted. Yeah, you mentioned Saturn. Saturn is just below it and should be easily visible, but for the fact that it's about 200 times dimmer than Venus. So Venus is the brightest thing in the sky. Saturn's only one of the brighter, in quote, stars, because it's really a planet. But if you've got a pair of binoculars, you should definitely be able to pick it up in the dawn light. So this morning they were technically closest, but they'll be just about as close tomorrow morning as well. So you're looking just to the lower right of Venus, and that's where you should see Saturn. Maybe you can see it with naked eye, certainly easy in binoculars. And even the morning after, Venus is only slowly moving away from Saturn, so you might be able to see it. Just technically, they were closest today and tomorrow.
And then tomorrow evening, then the moon meets the Pleiades. A thin crescent moon pairs with the cluster. What makes this a must-see, even for casual stargazers?
Yeah, well, the moon actually passed through the cluster. Now, the bright moon, even though it was a crescent, swamped a lot of the light. I could just see one of the seven sisters with the naked eye when the moon was in front of them. But in binoculars, it was a glorious sight, and lots of people sent in photographs. They'll be in the magazine. And to this time, though, the moon passes through the Pleiades when we can't see it. So from Ireland, we're just going to get to see it near the Pleiades star cluster. So if you're out tomorrow evening, as soon as it gets dark, look low in the west, and you should see the lovely thin crescent moon. And the Pleiades will be to its lower right. And it's less than your fist held at arm's length to the lower right of the moon. So you should be able to see it with the naked eye, because the moon's still a thin crescent, and the moon is not on top of the cluster this time. And they're so far apart, you probably won't be able to fit the two into the same binocular field of view. You might have to swing from the moon to the lower right to see the Pleiades. And if anyone's got a camera phone, they can photograph stars fainter than your eye can see. So you should be able to get a nice snap of it and send it into Astronomy Ireland magazine to be published, because the moon and the Pleiades are diving into the sun next month, and we won't see them close again.
And then, David, on Wednesday then, Jupiter snuggles up to the moon. Will this be visible to the naked eye, or do you need binoculars for this for that event?
This is naked eye, and it's probably the best thing to see, because first of all, it happens in the evening, so you don't have to get up at the crack of dawn, and Jupiter and the moon are the brightest things in the sky, in the evening sky anyway. So if you're looking again for the moon, who can't find the moon on Wednesday evening, you'll see to the lower left of it is the planet Jupiter, looking like the brightest star in the sky. So it outshines all the stars. So we've got the two brightest things in the evening sky right next to one another. It's going to be a spectacular sight to the naked eye. When this happens, people out walking the dog, who know nothing about astronomy, email Astronomy Ireland or ring us up and ask us, what's that bright thing next to the moon? Well, the answer is on Wednesday night, it's the planet Jupiter. So a huge planet. It's about 40 times wider than the moon. And the reason we see a disk on the moon and not a disk on Jupiter is because it's thousands of times further away than the moon is. And if you have a telescope, people will be well used to seeing the cloud belts, its great red spots, and its own four moons are going around it.
Okay. And then, if that wasn't enough then, three nights later, on Saturday of the bank holiday, this event sounds very spectacular. Mars brushing the moon and crossing the Beehive Cluster. How rare is this?
It's quite rare, but it's actually been happening every month for the last few months. And I've been lucky enough to see it. The clouds have actually cooperated for once. This time, it's on Saturday night, so everyone can stay up late that night watching it. And if you look at the moon, Mars will get much closer than Jupiter does on Wednesday. So on Saturday, you're going to see Mars about four times closer to the moon. Now, it's not Mars is not as bright as Jupiter, but it's still as bright as the brightest stars in the sky. So you'll easily see it with the naked eye. And it'll be to the lower left of the moon. The moon now, Saturday, will be nearly a quarter moon, you know, looking like a semicircle. So that's something to watch out for. And you'll be able to see it all the way through till after midnight, if you want to stay up that late and watch it. But if you've got a telescope, they're what we call 1.3 degrees apart, which is about just over two moon widths apart. And you should be able to fit the moon and Mars into the same field of view, especially in a small telescope, easily in binoculars, and see the craters on the moon while you're looking at the planet Mars, which is a really rare sight to see. But to the naked eye, it'll be obvious that there's this orangey-red star next to the moon, on very close to it on Saturday night. We don't want people to miss that. And again, you can snap that with your camera phone, send it into Astronomy Ireland magazine.
Okay. And then Friday week, the 9th, say the 9th to the 12th, then the International Space Station returns to our skies. When's the prime time to watch? And is there anything else we should be looking out for?
Yeah, ISS is a big deal. I just better skip back to Mars next to the moon. I forgot to say, of course, if you take your binoculars to the moon and Mars on Saturday night, you'll see the Beehive Star Cluster is actually in the same field of view. Now, you will need binoculars to see that. And Mars actually passes across that star cluster, a bit of one for binocular owners, for three nights after that. But back to the 9th of May, because we're off for the bank holiday, so it's to cover 2 weeks. And, of course, the International Space Station is about as bright as Jupiter. It's one of the brightest things in the sky when it flies over. But unlike Jupiter, that will hang there for hours on end till it sets around midnight, the International Space Station is only visible for a couple of minutes. But it's of interest because, first of all, it's the most expensive object humankind has ever built, worth about 100 billion euros, so a tenth of a trillion euros, if you like. And there are seven astronauts on board. So you can give them a wave. They won't be able to see you, and you certainly won't be able to see them because they're traveling at 17,000 miles an hour around the Earth. You can see them about 2 minutes drifting across the sky at the kind of speed that high-flying jet aircraft cross the sky. So if you see anything whiz across the sky, that's a shooting star, meteor, not the ISS. The time is evening from the 9th of May onwards, and we've 2 weeks to see it every evening, sometimes twice in the one evening. So what you do is you go to our website, astronomy.ie. Down the bottom, you'll see our social media. And every evening, all year round, at sunset, we post a note of what that will be the exact minute space station at its best. And if anything interesting is happening, like they're sending a craft up or a craft down, you could see it chasing the space station across the sky. So those space chases are very rare. And of course, sometimes it'll pass in front of the moon, or at least very close to the moon, and near the planets. Jupiter and Mars are in the evening sky. That could happen as well. And we tell you where you need to be in Ireland to see that happening. So there are apps you can get to predict the space station, but they don't do as much as our own daily social media posts. So make sure you have both.
Okay, and we'll talk to you about your lecture on the 12th in after this piece that I'm going to do with you. Now, 50 years ago, the crew of Apollo 17 captured an image that changed how we see our planet forever. The famous blue marble photo showing Earth as a fragile glowing sphere in the darkness of space. Now, side by side with new satellite images, we can just see just how much climate change has altered our world. And maybe, David, if I start, is why was the 1972 photo such a pivotal moment for humanity's understanding of Earth?
Yeah, I mean, I give a lecture in theatres around the country about the universe, and that's the picture I use to show the Earth. And it was quite a rare picture because it was taken when the Earth was full. So there are other pictures when the Earth looks like a crescent or half Earth, like the Moon does. But this one, they happened to be going toward the Sun on their way to the Moon. So the Earth was perfectly lit up, a perfect round disc. And there's so much you could say about this particular picture. It's an iconic photograph from the space age. It was taken when they were about 2 times the width of the Earth from the Earth. So they managed to stand back. If you're on the International Space Station, you're actually only a few hundred kilometers above the Earth. You can't see the whole planet like they did back in 1972. And that's what I think made it so iconic. The thing that stands out for me when you look at it is that you can't see the Earth's atmosphere. It's such a small, thin line around the edge of the planet that you don't really see it. Closer up photographs you can, and it just brings home to us how fragile the Earth is, that we've got this tiny, thin layer of atmosphere that we're polluting and is having all kinds of consequences for the Earth, and you can barely see it in the photograph itself. And the new pictures, which are now taken by a NASA spacecraft that sits a million miles away from the Earth, in the direction of the Sun, aimed at the Earth deliberately, so it can take the same kind of full disk picture every hour, year in, year out.
Right.
And in fact, they took some pictures every 15 minutes to compare and show that, you know, the ice caps are shrinking, the Sahara Desert's getting bigger, there's areas of deforestation on the Earth. These are the signs that humans on the planet are spoiling it for the future.
Okay. And astronauts often describe a profound shift in perspective called the overview effect. Can that sense of Earth's fragility inspire action on climate change, do you think?
I hope so. I mean, astronauts say we should get all the politicians up into space and have them look down. You don't see country borders. You know, you see nature at work more than mankind. If you look 50 years apart, you can see the changes that humans are making, but most of you don't see evidence for us. It makes you realize how insignificant you are, how important the Earth is, and how it's this spaceship, if you like, that we're on, going around the Sun through the cosmos, and how important it is to look after it, and how petty the affairs of man are compared to planets. So the overview effect, as it's called, is a very powerful effect that practically, I think, all astronauts have experienced. It just brings home how fragile the Earth is. You know, we take the air we're breathing now for granted. We shouldn't.
And, David, to turn the question around, are there any positive changes or solutions visible from space, like reforestation or renewable energy projects that are ongoing throughout the world?
No, I don't think there are, to be honest, because, as I said, humankind making a difference. If we dam up lakes to make hydroelectric power stations and the like, you can probably see those from space. But more often you see things like, I think it's the Caspian Sea in Russia, that has almost dried up. And that's a huge inland sea. I think it might actually be one of the biggest inland seas in the world. And it's almost gone. And that's because of climate change. So, you know, wind farms and like, you're not going to see those from space, maybe from the International Space Station with a pair of binoculars. People are really insignificant. And it's a shame that we've had such a big effect on the planet.
And I take it from what you're saying, David, is that blue marble picture was taken in 1972. I'm guessing that if it was taken in 2072, you'd have a lot of fear, would you? What it would show?
I would, yeah, because we're not slowing up significantly quickly the pace at which we're heating up the planet. And there's a big thing that's coming up in the future that, you know, you've probably heard that we don't want the atmosphere to warm up by more than 1.5 degrees. Well, once we start to go beyond that, there are all kinds of tipping points that we can reach where we think there are things like methane deposits in the oceans and on the land. And if these get released because they're currently held in by cold temperatures, then methane is 20 times worse than carbon dioxide at heating the atmosphere. And then things could certainly not just go up in a straight line slope warming the Earth, but certainly there's a massive spike. And it's thought that all of our technology could not reverse that tipping point if it were to happen. So it's important, while we can do something about it, being more careful with what we're doing with carbon and fossil fuels, that we can slow up this rate of increase and then maybe reverse it. There are lots of experiments and systems being developed that could do it either mechanically or by just looking after the biology on the planet. But if we pass these tipping points, then the country we live in won't be the same. If people have seen the projections of this island, of what it looks like, if all the ice caps melt, there's only a few spots left on this island that are above water. Most of Ireland will be flooded.
Okay, David, about 30 seconds. Can you just give us a brief intro to your lecture on May 12th?
Yep. Every month we have a prominent speaker. So we have Dr. Heidi Seaman, who's going to talk about why do people work in space? So astronauts is one, but also astronomers who study space. So if you want to know everything about astronomy, I think, and why people do this, she's going to give a fantastic overview because it's what she does for a living. So you can get tickets for that on our website, astronomy.ie. We'll get the links to the social media free of charge. And do join the society to get our monthly magazine. Pass around a euro a week.
Yeah.
And afford that. Keep in touch with the cosmos.
And I got the May's edition in the post today, so I did. And good luck to the Eurovision entry as well, which is all to do with space. Emmy for that. David, thanks as always for guiding us.
Yeah, we can talk about that next time.
We can, of course,
Yeah, we can, of course. The day after, won't it? Yeah.
Thanks as always, David, for guiding us through the cosmos. To our listeners, for exact ISS flyover times, free stargazing tips, or to join Astronomy Ireland for just €1 a week, visit astronomy.ie. Next Monday week, as next Monday is our bank holiday, we'll be back for more celestial highlights. Until then, keep looking up. This is Eugene Doyle from Kilkenny Today.